boy's got utter belief in him.
And somehow she's found the acceleration.
Hello, everyone. This is Robert Johnson. I am back from the 2024 World Indoors, here to give you another edition of Track Talk. It's a good thing you can't see me. I just taken off the same clothes that I was wearing at Sunday's meet. Woke up Monday, got on a plane, traveled all day. Now I've changed, but I'm back and ready for you to break it down for you. What a meet. Femke Bol, world record, Grant Holloway does his thing, Charlton world record, Mondo wins. But this is a distance website. What a meet for the Americans. Mid-distance, distance-wise, they won 7 medals. What does that mean for the outdoor chances? Josh Kerr totally dominated the men's 3,000. But now he's complaining that he's not paid enough. Is he right? Or is he spoiled like Narv Nordhaus, who did not win a medal but says he's the best guy in the field? All of that and more on today's show. We want to hear from you. Unlike Facebook, unlike Twitter, we have a phone number. Pick it up and call us. 844. Let's run 844-538-7786. We're hoping to hear from the fake Josh Kerr. Weldon, I'm worried. Like, if you're not a regular listener on the show, we have a guy. Sounds like Josh Kerr calls in a lot. We haven't heard from him all year. I wonder if he had a health issue. Is he dead? If anything, get him to call in because he had great performance. But how are you doing today?
I figured you guys were partying with him in Glasgow. But if you guys didn't run into him, maybe this gives credence to the theory the fake Josh Kerr could be the real Josh Kerr. He's too busy now. He's too big time.
Speaking of which, there was a thread on Let's Run's message board last week or the week before saying Josh Kerr has 4 to 5 employees and people were discussing how that was impossible. I wonder now if he has 5 or 6 because Jonathan Goltz is not here. Well, do you think he's been hired by Josh to be his publicist at all times? That was a joke, people. I mentioned it on, if you're not a Supporters Club member, you missed Sunday's show. But I announced it then, folks. John will be off all week. He'll be flying straight to NCAAs from Europe. He's on a European trip. Most people don't know this, but it's been a passionate love that John's had for, I don't really want to say who or what, for basically his entire life. And he's decided to keep that going this week. All I can say.
As a result, yours truly is flying to Orlando, like right after this podcast records, to meet with Noah Lyles, Lance Brahman, and crew. Guys, I need help quickly. I mean, I'm not meeting with him till tomorrow. So, any sprint people, what should I be asking these guys? I don't know the sprints. I just know storylines. I'm going to ask them, you know, what I'm interested in, obviously, but. Anybody wants to email me quickly, wejo@letsrun.com. Give us a call as well.
Well, I don't know if I've told you this. I shared a plane with Noah Lyles' agent on the way back from Belgrade yesterday. It's really fun to be at an airport after like a World Indoors because you see like all the stars in the airport. I saw a very tired-looking Femke Bol. Couldn't tell if she had a wild night out or just didn't have her makeup on. But anyways, I bumped into Mark Wetmore. We were both sharing an Iceland Air flight, highly recommended, very cheap to the East Coast. If a super agent like him can, you know, if it's good enough for him, it should be good enough for you. He's like, the price is right. I said, it sure is. But I did ask him about the, you know, there's been some controversy. Fred Curley says was tweeting at USATF saying, how is Noah Lyles couldn't the 4x4? I'm like the 7th fastest man in history. I've asked to run the 4x4 several times, and they don't put me on it. And now, since then, Fred has explained he doesn't really have a problem with Noah. He's got more of a problem with USATF. So I asked Mark this. I said, well, how much politicking went in that? He's like, none at all. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, we told him we were available. We told the coach we were ready, available for the relay. We really did not expect to be picked. There's like 13 guys that could have run it, but they just called us up and said we were ready to go. He's like, I don't think the coach was very impressed by the people that ran the semifinals. And that's what we said on the show all on Sunday night. We're like, none of these guys have been running that fast this year indoors. Everybody knew Belgium was pretty good. Might as well roll the dice and see if you can get a better leg. Now, outdoors, I think it's a totally different scenario. The U.S., like, it's almost impossible for the U.S. to lose the outdoor 4x4. So I can see why a coach would be hesitant or curly on it if he hasn't shown 400 prowess that year. So moving forward, like Lyles said afterwards, he's like, you know, I was going to run Tom Jones, which is a meet in Florida or one of these, you know, March, April meets in a 400 to show people what I could do. So I could make myself eligible for the relay pool. But now that I've run this indoor race, that's enough for me. That wasn't fast enough. I think it was 45.68 or something like that. That's not fast enough to put him on the outdoor team. If Curly or Lyles want to run the outdoor 4x4, certainly Lyles, he needs to do another race that's faster if they want to run the finals. Curly's run 43.7 in the past. I still think he needs to run at least one 4x4. But if I was these guys, to be honest, like, I wouldn't be messing up my training to try to get on the 4x4. I would be focused on winning the Olympic 100-meter title.
Take care of it. Your main event first, then see what happens. I think that's Lance Brahman's outlook on the relays. He's like, the relays should be fun. I heard him talking about the 4x1s. He's like, they complicate it too much. He's like, you get the guys that aren't this proper terminology. Give them 13 steps, tell them to go, and get the baton around at the Florida relays. Like, instead, we complicate things, make it too difficult. We agree on one thing. Yeah, wanting one run indoor 4x4 isn't enough for Noah. He ran a 4x4 last year outdoors, but no. Pedigree at the 200 or 100, no, that's not it. Like, that's not going to get done. Plus, outdoors, look who was on this team. I couldn't even tell you who the guys were on the 400 individual. Some guy who had never made, the NCAA final or something? Won USA's this year? Come on. That's why Noah Lyles was on this team. He performed. He ran well. I don't have a problem with it. He was great for the sport. Thank you, Noah, for signing up. But in a lot of ways, this podcast, people, it's a rehash of what we did on Sunday's podcast. Like, we had three podcasts every night from Worlds. You got to join the Supporters Club. Join today. WatchRun.com/subscribe. You get two podcasts a week usually, but we do daily podcasts from these big events. It's the only and best way to stay atop the sport.
I don't think it's going to be exactly the same podcast. I mean, I've had a little bit more time to come up with some stats and some analysis and think about what it all means. I'd like to start with the men's 1500. Just the 1500. Is it not the best event in track and field? I mean, obviously the men's 100 is pretty special, but it's the rare event. It's not super long, but it's the rare event where tactics matter. Where can matter, not always. And this race, I think they did. You know, there was 14 people in the World Athletics final, something Norb Nordest is unhappy about. I do think it's too many. Moving ahead, I would go aim for a 10-person final. That way, if there's any falls, end up with 12 instead of 14. But I went back and watched this race. Like, Nordest ran a tactically stupid race. Had nothing to do with, I think, 14 people being in the field. He was actually right near Jordy Beamish and Cole Walker virtually the entire race. The difference was he ran the entire race in lane two or lane three, which isn't good. All the medalists basically ran the entire race in lane one, except for the final kick. And he violated Robert Johnson's rule of little distance training. Like, I've made videos in the past where I circle people in 1500 training and stuff like that. I had one rule in 800. Very successful mid-distance coach at Cornell for 10 years. You have one move, use it wisely. In the 1500, you might have two. But my cardinal rule on indoor track and field, really outdoor, but more so indoor. If you're in the back of the pack, which is fine. I used to say, shut off your brain for 800 meters. Just relax. Get on the rail. Don't do anything. Do not move up. Do not move down. Turn your brain off. Make sure you're ready to go by 1,000 in a good position. But when you move up, if you don't like your position in a race and you move up, you better move up all the way. Do not go make a move and then get scared because you're coming up to a turn and then back off. And then you'll end up in sixth or seventh in the middle of the pack and you're still running extra distance. And Nordaz did that on two different occasions. At 200 meters, he moved up kind of like the Ingebrigtsen, start off slow and then move up, but he didn't go all the way. He ends up running next to Hawker and Beamish. And then he did it again around the 900 meter mark. It was actually a perfect move. He was right up there. If he just spent a little bit more energy, three laps to go, he could have been like third place. Instead, he got scared or whatever and just wasted the energy. And, you know, when we get to the race, I mean, when we get to the kicking, you know, he was up in the top two or three, headed into the last 100, but got passed and ends up fifth, you know, but he was in, you know, third place with 200 meters to go. So, hey, his comments were, you know, I'm better than the winner. I should have medaled and complained about the organizers. Dude, you could have run a better tactical race, but I can see why he thinks he's better than Jordy Beamish. His PR is what? 329? Beamish's PR is 335? 336? And when you lose a race by half a second, 0.49 of a second, when you run the whole thing in lane two, yeah, I mean, I agree with him. He probably is a better 50. He is a better 50 meter than Jordy Beamish. But guess what? Jordy Beamish is the world champion. And well, when we watch this race, you and I are both the same thing. Thought the same thing on our Sunday show. It's like, could this guy ever lose a tactical race? Like, what's, and at the time, I was just so amazed by it. I was like, oh my God, this guy's kick's unreal. He said, I think my kick and Cole Walker's the best last 150 in the world. And that may be true, but if you put, the question I have is, well, then put all the 1500 meters in the world. We hit 1100 meters in 242, which is what we have here, which is what we had on Sunday. You think Beamish beats them all?
On the Sunday podcast, I said if it's a 335 or over race, Beamish will win. No one can outkick him. I'm going to stick to that. I'm just very impressed with him. People pointed out, I don't know, Josh Kerr closed super fast. Outdoors, it's a different ball game. You might have the splits, but I think there's no way anyone could watch that race and be like, oh, wow, I'm confident about. So, but as we said on the Sunday podcast, and Jordy Beamish said the same thing, he probably needs to run the steeplechase outside. Is there a route to him for even a medal outdoors when it's going to be a 330 race? There's been no proof Jordy can run that type of race, but his mileage is way up. I don't think he should write it off. I think he should give it a couple tries, but that's the crazy thing. Because we're like, Jordy, you're the fourth best miler on the OAC. You have Yard and Goose. He's what now? 343 miler. You have Mariano Garcia, Garcia Romo, who was fourth at Worlds, NCAA champion, and Ollie Hoare. So Commonwealth gold medalist. And he's like, I probably still am the fourth best, but I'm the world champion. That's why you run the damn race. That's why, for some reason, despite Bryce Hopple and Ellie Tipiner winning gold, somehow we're talking about the men's 1500 start the show.
Because there's more to talk about. The tactics, the mistakes make it interesting. You know, like in an NFL game, whereas most of running, it's just like, okay, I mean, what am I going to say about Bryce Hopple? He was amazing. Ellie St. Pierre was amazing too. But it wasn't like there was a lot of tactics, you know, to talk about. I'm thinking about this race. I do not think that Jordy Beamish would outkick all the best milers in the world if it was tactical outdoors. And he was, now if he was, the problem is, first off, he's going to be a little bit in the back. No matter if it is tactical, he's not going to be up front. But here are the splits from World Outdoors last year. Josh Kerr won a 329 race with a 52.77 last 400. Repeat, 52.77. Jordy Beamish's final 400 on Sunday in Glasgow was 54.11. So that's 1 point, almost 4 seconds faster. Now, Beamish's last 200 was significantly faster. If Beamish is within a half second of anybody with 200 meters to go, it's over. Beamish closed in 26.11, despite having to go out to lane two or three, whereas Kirk closed in 26.55, although I guess Kirk was ahead. So maybe Kirk could have gone a little bit faster. But we got to remember, outdoors, these guys are so good. I mean, the way I view Kerr is he's faster than Beamish. He's a 140, what, 4800 meter guy. And he's got better endurance. He's the 2 mile world record holder, whereas Beamish ran 805. So that's my thought on it, but I would like to see Beamish not give up on the 1500. I think Beamish had a great view on things, both after this race and 2 years ago at World Indoors. I mean, which it struck me really in the interview 2 years ago. He finished 10th place in 3000. And he's like, I think that's the type of race I could have won. I was like, what? He said, my kick. He's like, but my legs are trashed from the prelims. It wasn't a straight final 2 years ago like it was this year. And he just knew. He's like, I take 2 days off, not running very much. Now he's running a lot more. Kick's still there. But his analysis of, he said, I don't think I can run 56 seconds a lap, 55 seconds a lap in 1500. Like here again. And then I said, what about the steeple? He's like, look, those guys are better flat runners than me too. And you got to remember, Girma is 723 indoor world record holder, 320. He's even a national record holder at 1500, 3000. Like this guy's a sick runner. He's fast. So those guys were like 6-7 seconds. The top two of the steeple are kind of taken. And I don't see Beamish. People on the forum were like, Beamish could take him at Worlds. And I was like, apparently Beamish had the best, well, from the water jump to the finish, Beamish was a second and a half faster than anybody else in the world this year. But I was like, do people watch the same race as I do? El Bacali, in addition to have run like 755 or 756, he's like Ezekiel Kimball's kick. His kick is insane. He just outkicks Girma every time. So I think El Bacali is A, faster than Beamish, and has a kick that's probably almost as good, if not better. I mean, he's closed in 58 and 60 in the last two worlds. One of them was a slow race, one of them was a fast race. You know, he had a 5 this year, fairly fast. Whereas Beamish was slower this year, running like 812. So I don't think he's touching those two guys. And then I think that it's remarkable that Jordi Beamish, in his first year of ever running the steeple, never running the steeple, ran 8:12 and finished, what, fifth of worlds. But I think that young Kenyan who burst out of the scene last year is going to be hard to beat. But I could see Beamish kicking for a bronze. And then the 1500, there was a big difference between kicking for a bronze and kicking for the win. Could he kick for a bronze? Maybe. Could he kick for the win? No chance. And that's where when I look at the 1500, as good as Cole Hawker were, as good as Hobbs Kessler were, this is, you know, Nordas, all these guys. There's so many guys that think, oh, I can do it. But I kind of think the medals are taken or spoken for. I hate to say it, guys. If you're a Cole Hawker fan, Beamish fan, Nordas fan, do you know who I'm handing them to?
Aren't taken for, Robert. That the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. The reason we ran this race. The reason we talk about the 1500 all the time. There's tactics all the time. That's why Josh Kerr is the world champion. No one would have penciled him as the world champion last year. A lot can change. So, but we did talk on the Sunday podcast. I think some of these people who medal, it's more likely than not, one of the American medalists won't even be on the U.S. Olympic team. So let's not get too carried away with indoors.
Well, exactly. But assuming that Jakob is Jakob and in shape, healthy and fit, and does the same tactics, it's a time trial. Actually, Hobbs Kessler, interesting enough, said he preferred that type of race. But I don't see how he doesn't medal. I don't see how Kerr doesn't medal. I mean, Kerr was magnificent in the 3000. And then if it's a time trial, Nagus has not shown the aggression I would like to see in these last two worlds, but he's a 343 miler. I wouldn't see, how does he not get the bronze? Now, when guys go for broke and go for gold, they can tie up. So generally you end up probably with a different bronze medalist than you'd be if everybody just said, you know, I'm going to run this race, make sure I get third or higher.
How could he not get the bronze? Did you not see Narv Nordas last year at Worlds? Like, very easily.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Nordas, I think, was thrilled to get the medal last time. Whereas indoors this year, he's running for the win. Probably cost him a medal. But it's just a different ball game. It's a different mindset of where you're placing yourself in the race, the moves that you're making when you're running for gold and when you're just not worried about that. Doing it. And actually, Beamish may have been in the perfect spot. Just put himself in the middle of the pack. Know that's good enough to medal. And then if you can steal the win, you steal it.
Great win by Beamish. And I was strongly on the record that he would not win this thing. when I saw him at 14-1, I just was like, if he somehow can put himself in position, maybe he could win this thing. I did not think it would be going from eighth to first in the last lap. That was my concern. And he still pulled it off. I was on the record before saying, I think he can medal outdoors. So has that changed? Now, maybe, like you said, if he's second half faster up the water pit, if it's a slow enough race, Robert could have conceivably win the gold medal. Now, like, so maybe Bemeth is, this win shifts my perception of him a little bit. But overall, which athletes in the distance races came away with a new perception for me? Heightened perception, I guess.
One thing about Beamish, it's just, I didn't give him enough credit because I don't pay enough attention to him because he's not American. But like he described it perfectly. I view myself as fit as Cole Walker. We both ran 8:05. Beamish is actually probably more fit distance wise. He ran 13:04. And then with that kick, since I was expecting Cole Walker to win the gold medal, I should have been thinking, well, Beamish can win it too. Now, by the way, there was a supporters club member who was shocked. Sarcasm can be lost on the internet because you can't tell when, on the written forum, someone's being sarcastic. But there was a full disclosure. When Beamish won this race, I immediately went to the forum. I said, amazing, amazing goddamn race. 8th to first, unreal, crazy. So it immediately cost me more than $1,000. And then a supporters club member was like, what? You bet on the people that you cover? Sometimes we do. I mean, do you not think that people that work for CNBC and are stock analysts, like buy stocks? Like if I see what I think is inefficiency in the market, and there was an inefficiency in the market because on Bovada, Cole Walker was 5-1 and lower odds than Hopps Kessler, I put some money down. But before you say, oh, first of all, I always say I'm a fan first, journalist second. But if they outlawed and told me not to do it, I would definitely abide by those rules. And secondly, can we not act like this is unprofessional? These British journalists who work for these major med publications and have a picture in like major papers, like what are they talking to us about? They're talking to us in the mix zone about the bets they have. In fact, one of them is so successful at betting, the apps know who he is and he can not put more than like £5 on it. So this is not like some crazy, I'm pretty sure the NFL analysts are betting on the NFL. So, just kind of full disclosure there from Rojo.
Well, Robert, I mean, a lot of financial publications don't let people trade individual stocks, I'm pretty sure, but it's not a good analogy. But biggest winners for me, one was are the men's and women's winners of the 3,000 meters. Josh Kerr was already a gold medalist, but holy crap, that was impressive. But we shouldn't give him, we can get to him in a second. By far, the most impressive performance on the distance for me was Elie Pierre running 8:20.87 to just absolutely obliterate the American record and win the gold medal over Sagai. I mean, when you get under 8:20, he's not under it yet, but that's just like special territory. I mean, having said that, Coco, Constance Constrav, has run 8:20.07. But when she did that, she wasn't out kicking Sagay to win a gold medal. She's at a new level, Pierre, clicking in all cylinders. What's not to like about this one?
It was basically perfection. What a meet for her. What a meet for New Balance Boston and Mark Coogan, all of them in Mark Coogan. The fear, as impressive as the run was, Wayne, hers was just textbook, just. You know, when I texted Coach Coogan after the race, I said, yeah, her agent, Ray Flynn, told me that you told him that she was going to win. What made you so confident? And he said, Ellie told me she could run under 220 and she wasn't scared. So she wasn't scared because of that. I told her to get in third or fourth, stay on the rail. Stay on the rail, people. Make one move and hope it's fast. And that's what it was. But her and then Emily Mackay just running for gold, like they were just fearless. Like clearly these women are not intimidated at all. I mean, good off the guy, one of the greatest distance runners we've ever seen in terms of range. I mean, she's just like, I was debating whether, I mean, she hasn't run the marathon like Hassan. She doesn't have quite the Olympic golds like Hassan, but she's won gold at 10,000, gold at 5,000, medaled in the 1,500. And now St. Pierre just took her down. But, you know, coming into the year, I was like, Ellie has to take a job. She's only run 358. I'm like, to medal, you're going to need to run. You have to be able to run at least 355. I mean, 9 women in the world last year ran 355. And only 4 of them were Ethiopian, or actually 5. Were, you know, Faith Kipyegon, boring injury, locked for gold. Then you've got Walteji Sagai, who they didn't let run the 1500, Mishesha Berke Hailem, or Muir, Stefan Hassan, for winning Hailu, et cetera. So this really gives the big jump in the structure of the American record by like 5 seconds. This gives me hope that, not hope, almost like no doubt that she's going to get down into that Shelby Houlihan type range, American record range of 354, which is pretty much, American record is 354.98. That's pretty much really the best anyone in the world not named Faith Kipyegon generally runs. I mean, Walteji ran 353.93, you know, but last year, most of those women were kind of 354, 355. And then you've got a real, you know, legitimate shot at a medal. And I forgot if we mentioned Tokyo Marathon in the beginning. We're going to talk Tokyo, Kipchoge. But I was thinking, Stefan Hassan, I forgot even what place she was in Tokyo. It wasn't terrible, but she didn't win it. She was fourth in 218.05. Yep, she found that. That made me wonder, like, okay, what's she going to do at the Olympics? It made me think, if the smart, safe move is not to try to do the marathon in the Olympics, just go for the triple in the track like you did last year, and then do a, you know, a fall marathon, pick up another paycheck. Because I don't know, there's more variables in the marathon. How's she going to be in a big hilly marathon? So that really hurts, I think, anyone's, you know, chances of meddling. If Sagai and Hassan end up in the 1500, it's just not good for everybody else who wants to get a medal. And what's difficult about the Paris schedule for the women is the track marathon double was more difficult, because you would assume that Hassan, if she's training for the marathon, her best chance on the track would be the 10,000. And the woman's got a sick kick, so who's dropping her? And then she outkicks you. But the woman's 10,000 final is the night before the marathon. So that's like crazy. So I guess either way, I don't see her running just the marathon. The more I think about it,
there's a 0% chance she just runs one event. One thing that is great about the Olympics, they don't run the men's and women's marathon together. They're separate events. Obviously, at a world marathon major, you can't really do that. Like, treating them that way somehow in the coverage as much as possible, that's the way to go.
Actually, I take that back. I looked at this wrong. The women's marathon 10,000 medal ceremony is the night before the marathon. This is crazy. The women's 10,000 final is on Friday, August 9th. And then the 1500 final is on August 10th. So I guess either way, that's good news for someone like St. Pierre, because if Hassan does go for the triple on the track, she's got to run the 1500 final the day after the 10,000 final. Certainly didn't cater the schedule for Stefan Hassan to quadruple. So she'd have the 5,000 final on Monday, 10,000 final on Friday, 1500 final on Saturday, marathon on Sunday if she was going that route.
You're going to try like a triple or something, which would help. If you're Ellie Pierre, you don't want to get in the 1500. So the doing the 10 and the 15 seems very problematic. The 10 and the 5 is very easy. So she'll probably stick to the 10 and 5. That makes Ellie's chances at a medal easier. We probably won't talk about this race much. Well, maybe. We had 2 American medals in the 1500. But women's 1500, But the Ethiopian tactics were so bad in that race. And they came up with six best times on the year, only three runners. And just the tactics were so bad. Well, they do that at the World's Outdoors. I mean, outdoors is different. Tactical F-ups like we saw don't happen as much outdoors. I don't know if it's just a bigger track. I feel like the pacing's easier. You see some stupid stuff, but not like you do indoors. Even, that's why I think Beamish's kick even somehow plays a little better indoors, which is all the, I don't know, change in position, whatnot. I was thinking it'd be harder for him, but in some ways you just see crazy stuff indoors.
Well, I ripped the Ethiopians and offered myself as their middle distance coach. I mean, the tactics were horrific in that women's 1500. To have two women coming in at 3:55 when no one else in the field has run under 4 minutes, and you only were to leave, and they had a third woman at 3:58, to only leave with one medal is wild. But congrats to Nikki Hiltz, who was sick, and Mike Smith seemed to give her great advice, like, just, you got one bullet, save it and use it. And Nikki kicked down Emily Mackay for the silver. Mackay just totally bold move, 400 meters into it, from seventh to first, gaps at field. Unreal. And, you know, Hyler, the world leader, wins. Well, tells you who won the silver medal outdoors last year. Does not medal. So two Americans, there you go. The two Americans did beat the outdoor silver medalist. And then, you know, Berkey Hylum, she's young. She's turned 18. Just, I think they, in hindsight, they clearly had a strategy of Hylum leads the first 400, Hylum the next 400, and then what, and then well, tells you was going to take it, because that's kind of where they all led at one point. But the teenager was like in last for 100 and sprints to the front. And when she sort of took the lead of 400, she did, slowed it down. So you go 62, 69, or 68. It's just a great way to tire yourself out instead of, you know, squeezing down the field. It's, maybe, well, you want to go, I guess you could argue that it's okay to go out in 32 because you're going to gap the field and they're going to have to, there's no wind to break them. They're going to have to chase you on your own. But I just think it's better to try to go, like, if you're going to run four flat, just go 65, 64, 63, and then slam it down from there. Good luck. Nobody else can run. You know, even if leading is the second lap, no rabbit. Well, your 3:55 becomes a 3:58. Good luck anyone else doing that. But yeah, it's kind of weird about whether you consider yourself, whether you ever get to earn an Olympic medal, because to be honest, some of that is out of these ladies' controls. If Kip Yegon, Hassan, Sagai triple, the 50, your odds of getting a 15 or triple or all in the 1500, just, that's what I meant, sorry. It's just so much harder to get a medal. Because not only are they three of the greatest runners in history, they're also extremely experienced. You think not going to make some tactical mishap. And I also think that having Faith Kipyegon in those races, it takes some of the randomness out, like with having Ingebrigtsen in there. You kind of know what's going to happen. Even if she doesn't take it from gun to tape, she's going to squeeze it down at some point.
Yeah, certain things are outside of your control in preparation for my Lance Vrametak. Tyson Gay ran 9.71 at the 2009 World Championships and got smoked. For Bolt ran 9.59. I think Gay also ran 9.80, didn't medal at the... Was that from the Olympics? I can't remember where that one was. But the good thing for Perrier was she out... And the 1500, at some of the distance races, there are tactics involved. Somehow you can sort of influence the other person. Essentially, if the person with the best time doesn't have a good kick, they're somewhat in trouble. But Sagay obviously can run up a fast pace. But the good thing here for Perio is it's not like, you know, this was a pretty fast, a very fast race, and she outkicked her. So fast and a good kick, very good combination.
So for the women, St. Pierre was the biggest winner. For both of us, I think, well done from the U.S. standpoint. I mean, Hiltz and Mackay, they both medaled. When going in, I thought only one of, I didn't think one of the Ethiopians was going to screw it up. I didn't expect two of them to screw it up. So they both medaled. That was amazing. But they've both been running well, so it wasn't a total shock to me. Plus, I've always trusted Nikki Hiltz's tactics. Now I trust Mackay's tactics as well. But for the men, Bryce Hopple, won the goal, and it was not just in terms of that, was also just of what I was thinking of him and what I'm thinking now. He was my biggest winner, although Hops Kessler is a close second. Like, when Hoppe was that year in college, when was that, 99? I mean, 19? When he got fourth, you know, winning everything in college, races every week, makes the U.S. team and gets fourth of the world. It was amazing. But since then, he's kind of been dominating the U.S. level, but not really doing much on the world scene. And I was kind of thinking, like, the best of Bryce Hoppe was past us. I mean, out in the heats, you know, after getting fourth at Worlds in 2019, the semifinals of the Olympics, out in the heats at the 22 home worlds. And then, now last year he did make the final, but he's only seventh. So I'm kind of thinking, okay, he's a guy that's, you know, got a great shot of making the U.S. team and then doing next to nothing in the Olympics. And then I heard, like, okay, he's gone to altitude. And I was like, that just made me, like, have hope. Like, okay, because otherwise he's like 27 years of age doing the same thing he's been doing. Well, I would expect him to be getting better in his late 20s and 800. And then after his just three magnificent races in Budapest, I'm just thinking, wow, like, this guy's at a new level, and I can't wait for outdoors. And they were all fast. 146.1, 145.0, 144.9. He might have had the fastest time in all three rounds. I know they had the fastest time in the final two rounds. And when I talked to Hobbs Kessler after the 1500, he's like, I didn't get to watch the 800, but I knew Bryce won. He's like, it's one of my best friends. We've been training every day together for 4 months. And I was like, you know, I knew that Bryce was out there and he was taking some pictures with a very nice strength club. They're both Adidas guys. Apparently more the agent hooked them up together and run rehearse and stuff. But Bryce is like a pure 800 guy. And Kessler is a 1500 meter man who was a pretty good endurance. So I didn't think they were working out at all. Or yeah, I thought maybe they'd show up a track together, do some strides or do a couple 300s together. And Kessler was like, we've been doing every workout together. He's like, Bryce is a freak, absolute freak. He can do it all. So he's like, I'm glad he's not in the 1500. So that shocked me. So the new training partners, he's got a training partner now. He's, you know, doing a, sounds like, you know, still got his college coach, but also a Warhurst coaching him. These kids, they just, it seems to really be working. So that's exciting what can happen. But looking at outdoors, you know, again, we don't want to get too carried away because it's just world indoors. AROP and Wanyani are, to me, are another level. They're insane. They were so good last year. But I do think Hoppe, with that strength that he has, being able to do the 1500 meter workouts, he may be a better championship worker than he is a Diamond League runner. So put him at the end of the championship, third race, you know, bronze medal, definitely possible. Something higher? Hey, let's go for it.
I mean, if you're training, if you're Hoppe, who was making world finals, but I sort of agree, he's definitely stagnant on the career. If you're training mostly by yourself, not that there's anything wrong with being a college coach, but like, that environment is very hard. You need some sort of stimulus, I feel like, to change things. Altitude and training partners, great move all around. So, I mean, you say Wanyani and AROP are a step ahead, but it's not like the 800 has been very strong the last few years. It's been pretty weak. Those guys are, you know, talking about running 141s and whatnot, but.
But that's what made AROP's run in that 1,000 meters earlier this year, is that a New Balance so present. Kessler tells me that Hoppe, he's glad that Hoppe's not in the 1500. Well, you think the 1,000 would be a sweet stop. AROP, who didn't go to World Indoors, beat Hoppe, ran 2:14.74, beat Hoppe by 2.17 seconds at the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix. Like, that is just so impressive. And then when Wanyani was, you know, running 142s at, what is he, 18? I mean, he was fourth in 22, and then second last year.
Our pre-race 10 people the most likely medal? Top five. When I say ours, Jonathan Galt wrote this. Nagusa is number one, he medaled. Cole Hawker, number two, medaled. Pierre is number three, medaled. Hoppel, four, medaled. Kessler, five, medaled. They all medaled. I think John fell a little bit victim to the trap of like, oh, the women's 1500, there's no spot for a medal. But if one person screws up, there was a chance for a medal and two people screwed up. Because Hiltz and McKay were back at 9th and 10th. Behind Wiley and Wilson and Harris, all from the 800. I understand the logic, but 5 for 5, John, top five. I think we should be giving him more praise than criticism.
He did an amazing job with that. And I was looking at that list because the U.S. won 7 medals, new record for us, they're just statistics-wise. And I was like, okay, I did that right before we started the show. I went to that list. I'm like, okay, how many did I really think we're going to medal? Certainly the top 4, right? Name them off.
Nagus, Hawker, Pierre, and Hoppel.
Okay, yeah, I would have been, you know, certainly at least 3, or probably real good chance of all 4. Kessler, I mean, I guess that's surprising to me, to be honest, like, that he beats a Nordås. He beats a Samuel Tefera. And then to get the two women, you know, actually, when John published that list, I pushed back about the two women because I said, I think Hiltz has been running amazing. Nikki's got a pretty good shot if one of the Ethiopians messes up. And that's what happened. But to full credit, John is also the one that was trying to get us to consider Beamish, and we laughed him off the face of the earth. So great preview as normal. As usual, John, we could just merge the three of our brains. It would be unbeatable algorithm.
All right, can we turn to the men's 3K, which was the most anticipated race coming in, I believe. We had Nagus versus Kerr versus Borrega. And with a lap to go, there was some debate about this one, but then it was just no contest, man. Josh Kerr just crushed them. Pointed at a deer. Kind of like, hey, do you hear me? Yes, we did, Josh. Yair Nagus got his first silver medal, first medal at the Worlds, and was happy with it. And we said afterwards, he did not run to win this race. I think that's a valid criticism. He ran for second or third place. I was sort of disappointed he didn't run to win. But the relief and joy on his face was great. You know, he got him damn effing medal. So now maybe, you know, he knows he's done it. He can do it at a world championships. He can kick up the sort of killer instinct. Because when, I don't know, I was talking to him for one of these races, essentially like, he's not a big sports guy growing up. I wasn't into sports. You hear him say that, but he's like, well, you hear him talking. He does have a very competitive aspect, mindset. I don't think you can be as good as he is on the world level and not have it. It'd be sort of interesting. You'd just be sort of like a total pushover. And I don't think so. But now it's like shifting from, okay, I just want to get a medal to I'm going to win the damn race.
It's a weird situation for Yar because, you know, I was leading the bandwagon in 2021, but that was just to make the Olympic team. Now he's running a 3:43 mile. We're like nitpicking what he does because the expectations now are goals are bust almost. It's good that he got his first medal. The OAC got their first medal. Hell, they've got a gold medal now. Beamish. Great. I mean, Ritzenheim's doing a wonderful job. Mark Kuga, New Balance Boston. My God. I mean, he doesn't have the same talent level as the OAC and this Willenberg. Which is amazing. But that's what makes the 1500 fun. So many good guys. They all would like to sit second or third on Inga Britson's shoulder and just follow the train. Right. And sure, you know, that's going to happen. They can't all be in third, sitting on the rail. But what's interesting to me, in terms of points of discussion, was Steve Soprano put this up on the homepage. Josh Kerr blasts crazy lack of prize money at World Indoor Championships. He backs Michael Johnson's breakaway league. Kerr got $40,000 for his win and $70,000 for his 1500-meter run at Worlds last year. And the Telegraph writes that $110,000 for becoming double world champ, less than half, what a darts player received for reaching the world final earlier this year. Look, I don't know. I've been around the block a long time. Almost like we should have a rule of like people just stop saying, like forbidding people from saying, oh, if only the sport was marketed better, we'd all make more money. Because people have not figured out an easy way to market the sport. I haven't even paid any attention to Michael Johnson's nonsense lately, because we had a billionaire in America trying to track down USA. And they did it for 1 year. They were going to have team competition in the U.S. But they folded it after 1 year. It would take probably 10 years for it to buy them. I don't still think the teams are going to matter. No one's going to care, because the only, we kind of have a team competition. It's called Worlds. And the team is actually a real team. It's like, what country are you from? When you have people that are like, went to college in Texas running for the New York team, it seems weird. The team is submitted that day and there's no salary cap, they can get on a different team the next year. So it's hard to do. And I haven't heard any details on this new format. But my pushback to Josh Kerr would be, yeah, I mean, you look at a golf tournament, how much money they make or stuff like that. But $40,000 isn't a lot. $70,000 for an outdoor world. But it's not like there's a ton of money going around, Josh. The meet was in your native Scotland, and the damn thing did not appear to be sold out. And it was a small stadium. And I don't want to go negative, but the atmosphere to me was not as good as other worlds indoors. The stadium was not modern enough. They had like halogen lamps. They didn't have the new lights where you can turn off the lights and do the laser show and the intros. Really built excitement for me at the last Worlds when they were putting their name on the track. And I think that shit's cool. They didn't have that here. But if we're not selling out the World Indoor Championships, and correct me if I was wrong, and I'm sold out and they just were empty seats. Like, I went to the Rangers football match. It was a meaningless game against, well, it wasn't meaningless, I guess. They did lose and it's going to hurt them in there. But it was a regular season game and there was 50,000 fans there. So, like, there's not that much money to go around and it costs a lot. Now, we could have more money. So the way I view it is, yeah, Josh is the gold medalist, but they handed out 24 individual gold medals. So, you know, is the 24th ranked dart player of the tournament getting $40,000? I highly doubt it. So to way to have more money, And I've read this article. Josh is like, you know, if we all signed up for a league, you know, and we agreed to race each other three times in the Diamond League circuit, maybe there'd be more money. So yeah, if you take all the money and all the money that's spent on the 25th runner and the 36th runner and who were getting eliminated in the heats, and you only had a professional league of 12 people, then Josh would make more money. But how do you decide which 12 people get to do that? And to me, I don't know. We want to have more head-to-head matchups. But I don't want to see the same 12 people race each other in the 1500 three times in a row. Like, it would be boring. So I don't think there's a real solution other than eliminating meet events. Like, if you eliminated events, you would obviously have more money. The cost to put all these things is massive. They have to build the stadium. They have to put all the press row out. They have to get the TV guys and the streaming and all that. And then they have all these events. And yeah, you know, the 1500 guy makes the same amount as the, javelin or discus or, yeah, I know there's not indoor events, but I do think that World Athletics is considering massive changes on that front. I know that they've done the research. I've talked to people there. They have internal stuff of like, they're doing fan metrics somehow during the meet. Like what gets someone to go in their seats? Do they go in their seats to watch the field event final or do they wait for the first track event final to come on? How do they rate their level of excitement in the 1500 versus a 10,000? And that would be one way. If you want to give more money, you just have to have fewer events and fewer participants. Because was Josh the number one star of this event or was the 24th gold medalist? I don't know. But if you actually look at the World Athletics rankings, pretty interesting because they have overall rankings.
Yeah. I mean, should the men's 100 meter runner receive as much prize money as the men's 1500 meter runner, as much as the men's hammer throw runner? And they're not the hammer indoors, but that's some of the problem with the sport. But we like to treat everyone equally. And then also there's a shitload of overhead for these championships. There is some money. When push came to shove, somehow the PGA Tour found a lot more money all of a sudden for these golfers once the Saudi league came in. I'm all for Michael Johnson and this group. They're talking about a record invest, you know, a record sum of investments worth seven figures. Seven figures? That's the $1 million. That is nothing. Like, this is such an option on the future. Like, you said, a billionaire tried it. They didn't really try it. How much money did they lose in this? Robert, a women's soccer franchise in the U.S., the expansion fees are now $50 million. You're going to get involved with a sport? You know, put at least $10 million into it, see what happens. But when there's a private profit incentive, maybe you'll get somewhere. But it'll be interesting. Our sport has a problem, essentially, because it's about 10 sports going on at once, not just one. If there was only one sport, one event we all cared about, which for a lot of people there is, the 100 meters, they would get a lot more money. But Noah Wiles makes a lot of money, I'll say that much. But it's not. That's where the appearance fees come in. They can pay the people who they value the most more money and get around to having to treat everyone else equally.
Well, right. And if you got rid of events, and I've actually considered that, and I think they're going to probably propose it, but what if in the world's years, like, okay, and I've said this before, but you do 2017 is a 100. Maybe there are certain years that certain events are always there, 100, 1500. I could see that, and that would help Josh because he happens to be in the 1500. But my thought process was, okay, you know, 2025, that's the year of the 100. 2027 is the year of the 200. And then, so you alternate 100, 200s, you know, 8s, 15s, you know, 5 and 10s alternate. So you don't have the full cycle. You only have half the cycle. It cuts their cost down substantially. And then in the Olympics, you have it all. You still have the traditional track for the Olympics, but other years, you just do half the events. And so I guess the total amount of money is not really going up, but it just increases it to the people. You know, it's the same attitude we had 25 years ago. Michael Johnson's making bank and the guy in lane 8 struggling to get by. But here's the World Athletics top 10 men's rankings, just overall rankings, all events. Duplantis, Mondo, Krauser, Noah Lyles, Ingebrigtsen, Warhol, Kiptum, RIP, Holloway, Gurma, Kipchoge, Toboga, Elbakali's number 11. So, you know, those are all big stars. And, you know, I would argue that, you know, better runners than Josh. So he's not really number one in the sport. He's like more like number 12. He's actually ranked ranked number 29. For the women, Faith Kipyegon, Cherica Jackson, Femke Bol, Shaqiri, Gudov Sagai. Just lost to World Indoors. American fifth. Tidja Safa, the marathoner. Yabi, the steeplechaser. Stefano San, eight. Malkovich, the high jumper, 9. And Rojas, the unbeatable triple jumper, 10. So, you know, that's the thing. You've got stars in all these events. There's 20 big stars, at least, in track and field. And a limited amount of money to go around. By the way, can I say something about the world ranking? I've defended the world rankings concept in the past, and John always jokes like, you know, we'll be on Outdoor Worlds, it'll be the first round of the 400 hurdles, and we'll be working on our recap. I'll look up to see, you know, about to shoot a heat off, and I'll look up the start list, and I'll have the world rankings, and I'll just, okay, lane 6 is the best person, I'll kind of watch them. So I do kind of use it for that. But I was at World Indoors, and like, Femke Bol's running, and her world rank is like not even number one in the 400. She's been setting world records nonstop. And I was like, how is this? And apparently, I didn't realize this. She complained after the fact, like 24 hours before the meet started. They were going to use seasonal best times to seed the 400. Instead, they decided to go off world rank. So she ended up in the same heat as Alexis Holmes, who outkicked her on a 4x4 last year, which seemed wild. And I was trying to think, what's the best way to do that? Because if someone hasn't raced at all, they should use the world rank. But there's got to be some hybrid approach. I think the best way to do it is seasonal, and then have some caveat if somebody's like a world champion that's been out, like you need to place them smartly. I don't know how to do it. But I think seasonal best time would be better, right? Don't you, Wilson?
They're trying to promote the ranking. It's not going to matter. If you're good, you're going to make the next second round anyway. I kind of applaud them doing the ranking. That makes the ranking mean something. Because for these top people, they already have the auto standard. So oh, who cares? We don't need to go race racist. So if somehow they could be penalized a bit. You know, I don't know. I mean, should then my whole thing is they should go off semifinal qualifying times and let you pick your lane in the final. But if you really want to be radical, you say it's off world ranking in the final.
But it doesn't work. The problem is the system, the rankings are flawed. It doesn't necessarily encourage racing. Pemke Bol races all the damn time. And set, what, 3 world records in the indoor? I know it's indoor. 400.
She'd already broken the world record this year. Like, international championship. That's the thing, though. They don't, and beat a very good number two. They don't, the world rankings, all that matters is time and the level of the meet that they're giving you credit for. It does not matter who you beat. And somehow I think who you beat should be factored in there.
Right. It would have to have some sort of a complex algorithm. She beats her training partner. So she's ranked 5th in the world at 400. Her training partner, Lika Klaver, who never beats her, is 4th. But I was looking it up. I was like, how is this possible? It's because the bonus points for these meets are massive. So if you run a 400, if you went to a track with no bonus points and run a 400 world record versus doing it like in the European Championships, it's massive. So Femke Bol, like she's been running some meets like Leuven and whatever. This isn't even like, they're not even like, well, I guess that's World Indoor Tour gold, right? Leuven? Anyways, it's like a pretty big indoor meet. Yeah. If you run 50 flat, in a random meet with no points, but you run Leuven and win it, the bonus points you get for winning are the equivalent of running 46.59. 140 bonus points are worth more than 3 seconds in the thing. So it's absolutely impossible for her to have a higher world ranking because these women running like 50 point in worlds are getting like 200-300 bonus points. So she's like maxed out because she doesn't run the 400 of world or worlds. So it's just like, it's a flawed system, definitely. By the way, did you see Femke Bol? None of our, it's really weird how the algorithms are in charge of the world. It's like none of our videos went viral this time. Normally some videos just get like 60,000 views for no reason. But Femke Bol's post-race interviews have gotten like 15, 20 million views on Twitter. The Brits apparently are convinced that if you close your eyes, she sounds exactly like Mickey Mouse. So it's kind of a thing. Just go to x.com and or Twitter and have an attemptable interview with Mickey Mouse. You'll see it.
Well, American audiences don't really, for whatever reason, like YouTube, they don't care much about World Indoors. But no, I had not seen she was getting 15 million views.
But big picture wise, I hope she doesn't get upset that people are saying she sounds like Mickey Mouse because I just love watching her. She competes all the time. She's like a Warhol. They just love to do it, to challenge themselves. And she loves it. She loves being with the team. She's smiling. She's interviewing. And I just wish some of our big stars like Athang or Sydney could like enjoy competing instead of seeming to like, particularly Sydney, like fear it. All right. Well, I think we've talked enough about worlds. We didn't say anything about the women's 800. The U.S. women were terrible. They didn't get out of the first round. But it doesn't, big picture wise, with Marah Hutchinson, who apparently is hurt, but on the comeback trail, apparently training again at Mo, it's like, we're such a big three, it doesn't matter. I think this Ethiopian woman who won the gold.
Did Jima?
She never even run 800 10 months ago. She might be joining the big three as a big four. So that'll make the event more interesting.
Well, I'm correct then, since John's probably listening. Probably Tsiji Duguma. I mean, the final was only 201.90, but she ran like 158 and smoked everyone by a second in the semis. She's a 400, former 400 meter runner. And just crushed everybody here to the last lap. So that sort of talent stack, I think, carries over well in the 800, but it's a tough event to break through right now, I'll say that much. But there's, come on, the days are over. They're being easy events, I think, to break through. Especially on the women's side, it's just so much deeper than it used to be.
One last thing about World Indoors. Kenya. I mean, they barely hit anybody in the distances and they were terrible. They won one medal. It's like, been posting several threads all winter, like, how can they only hit those two people? Someone pointed out they go more for cross. Ethiopians go more for indoors. That's really true or not, but we'll see. For the record, 2 years ago, I looked it up, Kenya only won two medals. So they're just not this deep. But I do still think, I mean, there has to be a lot of untapped potential because we see it. These people come to America for college and they end up, you know, doing well, or Helen O'Berry's now training in the States. All right, let's talk Okio. Speaking of Kenya, one of Kenya's all-time greatest athletes, Eliud Kipchoge, faded to 206.50 showing Tokyo with 10th place. And the question is Kipchoge done? Should he be on the Olympic team, etc.? He's now 39 years of age, officially. Although people in the mixed zone in Glasgow were saying they all think he's 3 years older than that. Of course, Abdi Abdurrahman being on the team in his 40s. He's 42, maybe he can still do something. But what do you think, Weldon? He's now lost two of his last three marathons. Started his career by winning 14 of the first 15, if you count the sub-2 exhibition. Actually, I think he won, if you count the sub-2 exhibitions, he won 19 of his first 21 marathons. His only losses were 2013 Berlin, when it took a world record to beat out, and 2020 London.
I mean, it's tough. We'll see what happens with the Kenyan marathoning this spring. If Kelvin Kiptum was still alive, sort of sad to talk about. I think Kipchoge's chances of being a team would be very tenuous right now. I mean, I don't know if this is good enough to get Kipruto on the team, but it's Kipchoge did run 202.42 in the fall, so slightly slower than this. Kipruto has won Chicago and Boston previously before this. 2021, 2022. So he's sort of winning one of these a year, but that means he's not winning something, you know, once a year. Last year, he was third in Boston, second in Chicago. You know, like what? 3.5 minutes behind Kipchum. Evans Chebet has pretty much been winning everything he runs, but he's been injured, but I think he's won 3 straight marathons. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. I assume between New York and, excuse me, between Boston and London, 2 big spring marathons to come, there will be at least one Kenyan winner. Likely that person will be on the team. Sometimes though, Kenya in the past doesn't reward Boston because the time doesn't look good. But I think a hilly course might reflect more, be better for Paris. The good things going for Kipchoge, obviously he's the greatest runner of all time, marathoner of all time, cumulative body of work. I think now Kipton's peak was better, but and he's run well in the heat of the Olympics, never done well in a hilly course. I could easily see the argument to leave him off the damn team. So, but right now, like, it's not like 3 names, like, oh, these guys have to be on the team above him. I think we'll have a much clearer picture after London and Boston.
I think Caputo's got to be on the team. He just ran super fast. He's beaten Kipchoge every time he's ever raced him in his life, including the last 2 races, in the last, you know, Boston in the spring, and then here. So that to me is one. And then I would put Evan Chebet. I mean, but we got to see what he does in the spring marathon. He missed the fall marathon season, but he's run Boston, New York, Boston the last 3 races, and they didn't even have him on the provisional team because he's time drove fast. That's the dumbest thing ever. If this guy wins, I assume he's in Boston, he wins that, you better put him on the marathon. And then it'd be interesting to see if Kenya does win, you know, London. Then you've got a debate. You know, if you've got 3 guys and Kipchoge, do you actually leave Kipchoge off? From a performance standpoint, there may be someone that's slightly better than Kipchoge. I would give Kipchoge the benefit of the doubt if selectors taking it because of the heat. But do I think he's done? Pretty much, yes. Like, I don't think that You know, I mean, is he relevant? Can he still run marathons? Yes. Maybe. Will he win another marathon? Maybe. But is he dominant? Is he going to be winning whatever it was, 18 of 20 or 19 of 21? No, he's going to be winning one out of three, maybe. Maybe one for the rest of his life. So it was great while it lasted, Elliot. By the way, get your 159.40 shirts today. Shop.letsrun.com, shop.letsrun.com.
Yeah, but look at the 2023 marathon list. Michael, there's nothing that impressive. I'm saying that, yet Kenya had five of the top six times in the world. It's kind of kept him twice. But then you have Kipchoge, then Alexander Matista, the second in Valencia. Like, you're going to kick Kipchoge off the team for him. Vincent Kipchimo Ingedich, who was second in Berlin. No, he got beat by Kipchoge. So those guys aren't really factors. Are you going to take someone who does well in, like, you know, like Amsterdam or something this year? Probably not, for sure. So far this year, I mean, Tokyo's the race. So yeah, Kiprodo's probably on there. It is sort of crazy that they think Evans Chebet wasn't on the provisional squad. I think that's a huge mistake. But even if you have a spot for Chebet, I think there's still a spot for Kipchoge the way things stand, unless someone goes off in London, somebody goes off in Boston as well. But I mean, Chebet going off in Boston may not matter. His only race last year was he won the Boston Marathon in 2:05. But the year before, he ran Boston, New York, won them both. So the last three marathons he's won on hilly courses, he's won them all. So I think a strong performance at Boston this year, he's on the team. But there's still a lot of room for Kipchoge.
Well, but
I think he'll probably be on the Olympic team more, I think about it.
We're discussing some of these areas, guys, do. I mean, Timothy Kipagod, the runner-up here in Tokyo, 2:02.55. She was second Rotterdam last year, 2:03.50. Now, he was only 13th at Worlds, so that may hurt him. But he won Abu Dhabi the year before that. Alexander Matuso isn't exactly chopped liver. He's first in Prague last year, 2:05.09. I mean, you were dismissing him. Then he runs 2:03.11. So I'm assuming he's in London this year. I'm not positive about that, but if you go win in Prague, second in Valencia, and then you win London, that's got to get on the team. That's got to do it. And that, well, it just also depends on performance. Like, is that better than what Kipchoge's been doing? Yes, because Kipchoge's a proven Olympic runner. He's 2 gold medal present there. I would put, unless someone is like lights out better, I'd put Kipchoge on out of the, just for ratings perspectives, but hey, it's not what they do. Who knows what efforts this Kenya is going to do?
I mean, that's why I like the U.S. system better. It's fair. You may not have the perfect team or obviously the best team for ratings, but I like the U.S. system better. But if there is a selection procedure, human nature should be, I generally want some human, if it's not, there's not human input involved, you're just going off time, which I think is a poor way to do it. I guess you could say top rankings or some shit like that, but no. If there's a committee picking, I think the committee generally is going to pick. The way things look now, I think they're going to pick Elliot Kipchoge for the team.
Another note, result of notes from Tokyo. Betsy Sena, who dropped out of the Olympic trials, gave the American record a scare. You know, fading a bit at the end. 2:19.17. Fifth place.
The American record is 2:18.29, for those of you who don't know it. But yeah, people were back at it this weekend. Betsy ran there. I mean, obviously a 2:19 is much better than running the Gate River Run, but the Gate River Run was this weekend, which is just always the U.S. 15K championships. Rachel Smith getting the win, $12,000. Kira D'Amato, 39-year-old mom, who didn't make the Olympic team, second place, $5,000. And then Mäkinen on the men's side got the win, $17,000 for him. And yeah, I think if you don't make the team, you got to bounce back. And I was looking at these results, Robert. I was sort of looking names. I'm like, oh, you might see some names you're not familiar with. I'm like, Robert Miranda. Like, who's that? I don't know who that is. Not a name I usually see. Well, with me, man, I didn't realize it's the Robert Miranda who's the, might be, one point he had the Yale 3K and 5K record. The Yale website, he looks like he's about 20 years old. This kid's got a future. I have a new favorite runner, Robert Miranda, baby. He was an Olympic trials qualifier. I didn't know, 214. But you can't sing the praise of someone who's got a real job. I think he's a student, but like anymore, because Dakota Lindworm made the damn Olympic team with a full-time job.
And by the way, if you didn't see the world's interview on YouTube I did with Georgie Bell, British runner, full-time job, cybersecurity expert. She went to Cal, was terrible, never made the Pac-12 final in anything. Now she's fourth in the world. She quit the sport for a number of years, got back into biking. So don't give up. Don't give up, people. Now, if you see that, you know, $12,000 for first, $17,000 for first at the US 15K, and Josh Curtis is barely making twice that, but it shows you the money is, you know, there, like in the major marathons, the runners get a few dollars from all of the entrants in the races. There's not tens of thousands of entrants or for spectators at the World Indoor. Where they are, they run around 25 different events. So, I mean, I think World Indoors had like $2.5 million in prize money. It would be interesting. If you had a track meet, if you had a World Championships or Olympics, and you only had like, you know, six events, 100, 400, 1500, marathon, long jump and pole vault, maybe shot put, would you get the same ratings? And the same money is divided through. I mean, it's just, you're dividing the money amongst a smaller number of people. One last thing about this Kerr quote. I'm actually going to read these quotes. It would be cool to sign athletes to a league. If you could sign someone to a diamond league and have 12 guys race each other three times, I think that would be a situation where guys would start to think financially it would make a lot more sense for them to worry more about the league than they were about a world championship. Come on, Josh. That's one of the dumbest quotes I've ever heard. The bonuses, the New Balance. I mean, Brooks is paying him, you know, some of these guys seven figures because they want them to be world champions, not because they want them to finish some Michael Johnson league as the winner. Like, that's absurd. Most of their money comes from their shoe contract, and the shoe contract is based on being the world champion. But he also says, we're lucky to have the likes of Noah Lyles, Grant Hall, wife, and Cabal. Amazing athletes come here and do their job, but those numbers are lower than parents' fees now for athletes of that caliber. So, you know, hey, the rich guys, if Kerr's getting $40,000 for a race, sounds like he's doing just fine. But hey, I'm all for everyone getting rich. Hopefully it trickles down to the media soon. All right, well, then now you've got a flight to go. You got to go see Noah. Feel free to tell him. Make sure, you know, hey, I'm not the one that doubts you. It's my brother. It's my twin. Because Mark Wetmore got me confused. He said, hey, we'll see you tomorrow, right? And I was like, no, it's Weldon. My name's Robert. I'm the slower one. Lower SAT score. Fewer kids.
Did you talk to Noah? I mean, hopefully. I guess I'll just have to break the ice just real quickly. I'm not the guy. Did you say you wouldn't win any gold with the gold medals? Or was it just individual 200? Or was it also individual 100? Because now, he's definitely the favorite for both.
Yeah. The only question I had a chance to ask you, I was the one that had to blurt out the question about Fred Curley. So I kind of came out aggressive. I didn't mean it negative. I wanted to say, hey, did you see what Fred Curley said? So he didn't take it. He didn't seem like he was annoyed by it, but it's a tougher question than the average press person. I couldn't believe it looked like they were going to sit there and not ask him about the Fred Curley comment. So anyways, if you missed our world coverage, check it out on the homepage today. Go to the forums. I'm sure there's interesting talk. There's talk about Nordost. This Nordost comments are on fire. We got a lot of interviews on YouTube. I would recommend the Beamish interview, the Bell interview, but the ones that I did, those were cool. But we'll be back. I guess for the Sports Club podcast, we probably should do it after NCAA. So NCAA indoors are Friday, Saturday. I don't really want to do a preview show. John out of town, it's going to be tough. We're going to be a preview Thursday night that meets starting Friday. No. So let's do a post Saturday show. John will be back. Three of us will all be together. John and I will be together. We can do it in Boston real quick after the meet ends on Saturday night. Until then, sign out.